Ladies and gentlemen, it's now my pleasure to introduce the Minister for Defence, Senator Maurice Payne. Maurice entered Parliament in 1997 as a Senator for New South Wales, and during her parliamentary career, she served as a Shadow Minister in a number of portfolios. She's long maintained an interest in international affairs, as evidenced by her service on the Joint Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade. She served as the Minister for Human Services and as Acting Minister for Defence Materiel and Science, before being sworn in on the 21st of September 2015 as Australia's 53rd Minister for Defence. Maurice Payne oversaw the delivery of the 2016 Defence White Paper, in which the Turnbull government committed that by 2020-21, Australia would spend 2% of our GDP on defence. And I think the government deserves credit for this decision to restore Australia's defence budget. In light of a global order that may well be unravelling or certainly fraying, and a region that is increasingly troubled, Australia needs a more capable, muscular ADF in order to protect the full breadth of its interests. I think for Australia, the era of cheap security is over. So I want to congratulate again the government on that decision. Before I call Maurice to the lectern, let me just add a more personal note to the CV that I just read out. I have known Maurice, I think it's a quarter of a century, or close to. I first met her when I was a university student and I was a member of the National Committee of the Australian Republican Movement, which was committed to the controversial proposition that Australia's head of state should be an Australian. In 1994, Maurice joined the National Committee as Malcolm Turnbull's vice chair of the ARM. And at that time, that was quite a brave thing for an ambitious young Liberal to do. But throughout her career, Maurice has consistently stood up for her principles, even when there has been some political cost to doing so. And I've always respected her for that. Ladies and gentlemen, Australia's defence relationships in the Pacific are some of our strongest and most important. We're the region's leading trading partner, investor, donor, and security guarantor. We play a key role in disaster and human relief and humanitarian relief, as we've seen in Tonga and PNG recently. We also play a key role in regional security. The world looks to us to lead in our immediate neighbourhood, as we did by helping East Timor to achieve independence and restoring order in Solomon Islands. So we're very pleased to hear today from the Minister for Defence on Australia's role in this important region. At the end of the Minister's speech, the Minister will take questions, which will be moderated by Greg. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Senator Maurice Payne, the Minister for Defence.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and Michael, thank you very much for your very warm introduction. I wasn't going to say 25, but you said quarter of a century, that kind of wrapped it up. It is a resilient relationship, which, as you say, started around the table of the Australian Republican Movement, a mission to which I am still completely committed, if not perhaps just slightly distracted at the moment. Something to get back to, I think, in due course. To those of my parliamentary colleagues who may be here, Your Excellencies, many, very many other distinguished guests, and it is always invidious to pick out one or two, but I do see the Chief of Air Force, Air Marshal Leo Davies, and also Sir Angus, very nice to see you here also this morning, and a lot of other guests, including the Charge d'Affaires from the United States Embassy, Jim Caruso, great to see you here. Let me also acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which we are meeting here this morning, the Ngunnawal people, and pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging. I'm very pleased to be here this morning at this conference and understand its focus is exploring the connection between security and resilience in the Pacific, and I commend Lowy very much for this focus. Indeed, Defence and Lowy have collaborated for 2 years on this valuable Pacific project, and I'm very pleased to address today's event. The government's rationale, or Defence's rationale, for supporting the Lowy project is pretty clear. At the geographic crossroads between the Indian Ocean, Asia, and the Pacific lies Australia. As a focused and responsible regional government, Australia must embrace our strategic geography, and we must work cooperatively and collegiately with other nations to address the challenges that confront us. Michael acknowledged the Defence White Paper in his opening remarks, released just over 2 years ago, which made it clear that after the territorial defence of Australia, our highest priority is the stability and security of our immediate neighbourhood. Indeed, one of our three strategic defence objectives is specifically to support the governments of Papua New Guinea, Timor-Leste, and Pacific Island countries to build and strengthen their security. This priority is also reinforced in the 2017 Foreign Policy White Paper. It has, as one of its five major priorities, the specific objective of stepping up support for a more resilient Pacific, and goes on to say that the Pacific is of fundamental importance to Australia and that Australia will engage with the Pacific with greater intensity and ambition. Certainly, our region faces significant change in the years ahead. Our defence and foreign policy white papers both point to significant regional challenges, including climate change, shifts in regional and global strategic power, technological advancements, economic dynamism, maintaining a rules-based global order, and supporting each other in times of natural crises. Fundamentally, a secure Australia needs a secure, stable Pacific. As an advanced and developed economy, we have a responsibility to support our neighbours when disaster strikes and in less urgent or pressing times to share lessons and knowledge and skills that increase our collective resilience and capacity for timely response in the future. Across our Pacific neighbourhood, we share a number of challenges and indeed aspirations. We're a maritime community of nations, and we need collective maritime certainty. We depend on secure sea lines of communication that are governed by reliable and enforceable rules, and that are free from interference, coercion, and intimidation. Our prosperity relies on economic stability, on open markets and free trade. We're entitled to rely on our exclusive economic zones, the sovereignty of our borders and boundaries, and to trade fairly, without predatory or unethical behaviour forced upon us. We insist on a rules-based order as liberal democracies. We may indeed have different models of governance, but we are unified in exerting our rights, our freedoms, and our liberties. For all of our aspirations, we face some challenges. They include, and familiar to all of us, extreme weather events, unlawful foreign fisheries exploitation, drug trafficking, irregular people movements, the exploitation of so-called economic incentives, interference in domestic affairs, and as we look to the future, potentially sophisticated military risks. As the security and economic challenges that the region faces evolve, so must Australia's engagement and support. Our ambition is always to be the region's security partner of choice, and we aim to meet this through the provision of holistic through-life support, which is driven by common interests in the future prosperity and security of the region. Our support to the Pacific must remain adaptable and flexible to the needs and priorities facing our partners across the Pacific, and it must be done cooperatively. To do that effectively, we are adapting our bilateral programs of training and assistance. We're incorporating them in broader whole-of-government efforts, and we're coordinating with other donor countries to ensure maximum benefits and engagement for the region. I wanted to speak briefly about the Defence Cooperation Program, which will be familiar to many, if not all of you. In fact, since the 1960s, the Defence Cooperation Program has formed the core of Australia's international defence engagement in the region. The DCP aims to improve our ability to connect with our regional partners in response to common security challenges and to build people-to-people networks across our region. The South Pacific is the beneficiary of Australia's most extensive and tailored defence and security cooperation program. There are about 58 Navy, Army, Air Force and defence civilians posted across the Pacific. In the 2017-18 financial year, we'll spend almost $100 million on Pacific Defence Cooperation Program initiatives, such as training, infrastructure, gifted capabilities, and transferring national security and military skills between our countries. Collective maritime security is a good example of how we're working with partners to deliver capability that they need and how that is changing over time. The well-known Pacific Patrol Boat Program and its successor, the Pacific Maritime Security Program, continues to be the centrepiece in many ways of Australia's DCP in the South Pacific. However, those Pacific Patrol Boats are feeling their years, and the countries of the region have told us that they do need new capabilities with longer range and better seakeeping capabilities. So in 2014, the Australian government announced the Pacific Maritime Security Program as a next generation renewal of the program, and in 2015 agreed to complement the gifting of larger and more capable patrol boats with integrated civilian aerial surveillance and enhanced regional coordination efforts. Importantly, these vessels will continue to be sovereign assets of each country and enable participating nations to independently secure their own borders, assert their sovereign rights, and protect their natural and economic resources. As a direct and tangible result of Australia's DCP support, Pacific Island nations have a capability to respond to natural crises in their own countries. For example, the RVS Takuro was used by the government of Vanuatu to evacuate communities from Umbai in November 2017 under that threat of volcanic eruption. And Pacific Island nations often offer to support their neighbours in humanitarian responses with the deployment of their Australian-given patrol boats with HADR supplies. We saw that recently in the responses to tropical cyclones Winston in Fiji and Geeta more recently in Tonga. So the new Guardian-class patrol vessels will be larger and more capable than the previous generation. It has better response capacity for humanitarian disasters and for the first time supports a mixed gender crew. I'll come back to that point in a moment. The first vessel is scheduled to be completed in October this year and will be gifted to Papua New Guinea. Australia's $2 billion investment in the Pacific Maritime Security Program will complement the efforts we're already making in partnerships with organisations such as the Foreign Fisheries Agency, the Pacific Transnational Crime Network, to strengthen regional information sharing and response coordination. Defence funds the fuel and food costs for the Pacific patrol boats to work together in the four annual maritime surveillance operations led by the Pacific Islands FFA. These operations are essential for regional and bilateral cooperation, for familiarity, for enhancing response efforts to security challenges in the region. Further, in March this year, the new Pacific Maritime Security Program civilian aerial surveillance was able to contribute to one of the FFA operations in the Micronesian region, Operation Rai Balang. We're also on track to assess the regional airfields of the 15 participating Pacific Islands, and the FFA has tasked over 80 hours of regional flights to date. Once it's fully implemented next year, the region-wide aerial surveillance will provide up to 1,400 hours of annual aerial surveillance through two dedicated aircraft located in the Pacific and provide the FFA and nations with surveillance product of illegal activity in the region. The scale of that support across the Western and Pacific region provides much needed information to the nations of illegal activity in their EEZs. It's an excellent example of Australia supporting a capability that is being provided to the Pacific Islands Peak Surveillance Body, the Pacific Islands Foreign Fisheries Agency, to enable those nations to protect their own resources. Across the region, we're also working bilaterally with our Pacific partners to support them as they face changing security priorities. As another pertinent example, given that I go from here later today to Brisbane to join in the ministerial bilateral meetings with our Papua New Guinea partners, our DCP with Papua New Guinea is our largest at around $40 million in the current financial year. In PNG, the DCP aims to assist the ability of the PNG Defence Organisation to face the challenges of increasingly complex national security issues in our region. With the agreement of the Papua New Guinea government, in 2018, the priorities of the the priorities we are pursuing with them include the Defence Force Maritime Element, strengthening our relationship with the PNG Department of Defence itself, and assisting PNG to further develop their security capabilities in preparation for hosting a safe and secure APEC during 2018. Tonight, I am also meeting again with my PNG counterpart, Minister Solan Mirisim, because we are, in fact, as I said, attending the 26th Ministerial Forum. I'm on a promise to visit Telefomen with Minister Mirisim, his own constituency, a constituency which would be somewhat confronting to most Australian politicians, I think, given he advises me it's inaccessible except by helicopter or walking. I plan to put that to some of my colleagues. We'll see how we go. As you're also very familiar with elsewhere, examples like the long-term regional assistance mission to the Solomon Islands, or RAMSI, was an outstanding representation of collective assistance and support from Pacific neighbours. A good example of how the smallest and the largest countries of the Pacific family came together to help the people of the Solomons in Operation Help 'Em Friend, built on consultation and respect and collaboration between our combined services. The defence contribution to RAMSI itself was significant, with over 7,000 ADF members and defence civilians deployed to the Solomon Islands over the life of the operation. Our engagement has changed. It's adapted. We now aim to contribute to the security of the Solomon Islands by promoting the development of the Royal Solomon Islands Police Force, primarily through Exercise Coast Watches, which focuses on policing activities in the outer islands, including responses to natural disasters. Also in Vanuatu, Defence will contribute to the Vanuatu Police Force's humanitarian assistance and disaster relief capability through an annual program called Exercise Vanuatu Alliance and through Operation Goodwill, which will help to develop a sophisticated remote policing capability and foster both cooperation and regional interoperability. In Tonga, our relationship continues to develop and Defence is actively building more connections. For instance, in October last year, after the volcanic activity in Vanuatu, Royal Tongan Marine platoons were embarked on HMAS Chules and assisted in the evacuation of Vanuatu's Umbay Island. Deployments like that are, I think, very pertinent evidence of the value of our shared efforts, and I also look forward to visiting Tonga myself later this year. As many of you would know, we are working more closely with Fiji on a number of levels. We are currently repairing Fiji's two Pacific patrol boats. Those repairs will ensure that Fiji continues to have an effective patrol boat capability in advance of the arrival of its replacement vessels under the Pacific Maritime Security Program, which are due in 2020 and 2023, respectively. In November last year, I visited Fiji. The first Australian Defence Minister to travel to Fiji in over 20 years. Met with my counterpart for the second or third time, the Minister for National Security and Defence, the Honoratu Enoke Kumambola. And we were able there to reaffirm our two nations' commitment to strengthening our defence relationship. We agreed to elevate the Australia-Fiji defence relationship by establishing formal annual Australian-Fiji Defence Ministers meeting. I also visited the Blackrock Peacekeeping Centre and met with its leadership, including some demonstrations of capability, and announced an Australian contribution to the centre, construction of a humanitarian supplies warehouse, and also the establishment of an ADF instructor position at Blackrock itself. Ladies and gentlemen, while we can manage our strategic risks by working together to increase capacity and interoperability to some extent, nature, of course, and most particularly in our region, poses unpredictable challenges for us. The Pacific is one of the most disaster-prone regions of the world. And as the frequency and severity of extreme weather events changes, we do need to work together to do more to enhance resilience, recovery, and survivability. Australia, New Zealand, and France continue to work with regional neighbours by offering shared capabilities, such as airborne damage surveys from P3 Orions and airlift transport of emergency material via C-17 and C-130 aircraft. We also share heavy sea lift capabilities to complement the light military and coastal civilian sea lift capabilities that are owned often by Pacific nations. And Papua New Guinea is another good example. After the earthquake most recently, the ADF provided C-17 flights carrying humanitarian assistance and disaster relief supplies. And between them, a Hercules, a King Air and three Army Chinook helicopters created an air bridge, transporting supplies and personnel between Port Moresby and the Southern Highlands. Through that process, over 310 tonnes of supplies were transported to where they were needed most, in a timely way. Preparation for disaster recovery is a key theme of the formal POVI Endeavour exercise framework, which was endorsed at the 2015 South Pacific Defence Ministers meeting. Under that framework, regional militaries conduct major multinational field training, command post and tabletop exercises aimed at harnessing those core skills and maintaining and developing interoperability. I want to briefly discuss the capability multiplier effect, if you like, of including women in national security roles and outcomes. And that goes back to the observation I made in relation to the new patrol boats in the Pacific Maritime Security Program. Regional stability and disaster response operations that include women in leadership roles, in consultation forums, and security initiatives are measurably stronger, more resilient, and more likely to succeed. Australia, as you know, is a strong and consistent advocate for the United Nations Women, Peace and Security agenda. One very tangible and practical outcome of integrating a gender perspective into military planning is demonstrated by the redesign of the new Guardian-class patrol boats. During consultations with Pacific Island nations, we learned that it was very difficult for some nations to send women to sea because of the typical accommodation layout. By identifying that in the planning phase, Defence was able to include the requirement for separate accommodation for men and women in the design of these new patrol boats from the get-go. That will allow women in those respective countries to have a fulfilling seagoing career if they wish, to actively contribute to the national and economic security of their countries, and prepare them for higher ranks and for greater responsibilities. As part of Australia's commitment to the region, we also hosted a forum in November last year, Women in the Pacific Defence Forces, as part of the South Pacific Defence Ministers meeting. Over 70 attendees from seven Pacific nations came together to support the efforts of Pacific Defence Forces to integrate a gender perspective into peace and security efforts, to strengthen female military participation in conflict prevention, in management and in resolution. It is indeed very valuable work. It also reminds me to reiterate the importance of the South Pacific Defence Ministers meeting as a young but very important piece of the regional architecture that enables the key nations to engage. Defence's deep and long-standing relationships with nations across the Pacific demonstrates how central regional stability and security is to Australia's strategic interests. This conference today and the opportunity to make some remarks this morning has given me a chance to do a stock take, if you like, of some of those key aspects. As I said in my opening remarks, our engagement is intended to make our country a preferred security partner for the region, precisely because we are of the region and we take our responsibility as an engaged and capable neighbour very seriously. So that commitment to help Pacific Island nations build the resilience they need to respond to our shared future challenges is unwavering and is one to which I deliver a personal commitment and a long-term, as Michael said, long-held interest in the security and stability in our own region. Thank you.
Minister, thank you very much for your comments. I think we have time for a few questions before your aide-de-camp stare turns me to stone. So,
You'd be surprised how often I have to be chipped apart.
If I could ask people, if you have questions for the Minister, again, state your name and affiliation, and we'll go from there.
Jonathan Pryke from the Lowy Institute. Minister, thank you very much for taking the time this morning to speak to us all today. You mentioned the regional assistance mission to Solomon Islands. That costs Australian government in the tune of somewhere close to or more than $2 billion. And it has, I think, been seen as a success story of our engagement in the region. But in the unlikely and unfortunate event that a similar situation should occur in the Pacific, do you think there is an appetite for Australia to do it again, to engage, if invited, in a similar sort of way as we did in the Solomon Islands through Ramsi?
Jonathan, I'm not sure if you mean event again in the Solomons itself or more broadly. Well, we would always assess every eventuality of that nature on a case-by-case basis. And I think relationships have developed over time. Engagements would be different, one imagines. I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all response, frankly. And as we moved through that phase, the ending of the mission, and build from there, I think we'll take all of those opportunities and all of those experiences to determine what would be required should a broad regional response be called for in the event of a conflict or an issue or a disaster of an extreme nature. But I don't think it was one size fits all. I don't think you could say, yes, that's what we'll do there as well as there. That's my personal view.
At the back, John Blackson, please.
John Blackson, head of the Strategic and Defence Studies Centre at the ANU. Thank you very much for your excellent presentation. You spoke about the relationship with Papua New Guinea. That's clearly a very significant one. One of the things that's on the horizon is the issue of Bougainville and the future of Bougainville. I'm just wondering if you could comment on how we're planning to engage with Papua New Guinea on managing that.
Well, we would prosecute across all of our broad extant relationships, obviously, in terms of engagement. It's worth noting that in the election last year, if I recall correctly, part of the support that the ADF provided was provided into Bougainville as well. I think that helps with familiarity and engagement. And through the DCP itself, and I think I omitted to acknowledge Major General Bilton, who's also here this morning, the Deputy Chief of Joint Operations, but through the operational engagements that we have, that is part of the ongoing process, ensuring that as the situation unfolds, we have effective communications, effective relationships, we can prosecute those to the fullest extent.
Minister, I might take the privilege of asking the last question. We have seen under the recent administration in America a far more hard line look at certainly Chinese and Russian revisionism. The National Security Strategy and Defence Strategy out of the US was very explicit on the role of China pushing the boundaries of the international order, which is such a part of our policy. How do you see that playing out potentially in the Pacific, and how can we support our Pacific Island nations within this area?
Let me start at the back end of that question. I think the best way to provide support is to provide maximum engagement, which is to ensure that we are the nation and the people to whom our Pacific neighbours turn in the event of virtually any question, advice, support, assistance, engagement, whatever it might be interpreted as. That is a very important focus for us. It's one of the reasons why I use the DCP as a powerful example across a number of countries, because that does, from a defence perspective, give us very important people-to-people relationships that are long-term, that are sustained over time, particularly as individuals move through ranks, move through positions in defence organisations. And I see that every day. I see that every country I visit, where the people who travel with me and support my engagement, I see Commodore Woodall here, who travel with me, support my engagements, are well-known. Their colleagues are well-known. They are very personal relationships, and I think that that's important. But not to simplify it to only that. Let me say also that we have obviously taken, from Australia's perspective, a very focused approach in our own domestic environment in terms of what we're doing with our foreign interference legislation. And we are perfectly willing and happy to explore that with any of our Pacific neighbours. I think it is a very good case study for approaches that can be taken in, you know, in parliamentary environments particularly, and one which I am sure is being well prosecuted by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. They're just two examples. And then from Australia's perspective, in itself. We obviously have to be very alive to the stark warnings that come from the United States, that come from the United Kingdom and other Western democracies that have been experiencing the sort of foreign interference that we're talking about. We are very alive to that, and we have to be prepared to engage with our neighbours, to alert them when we see challenges, and not to dance around on those issues. I think that's very important.
Minister, thank you very much. On behalf of everyone here, thank you for your time. I know you have to jump in a car off to, up the hill to Russell, but on behalf of the Lowy Institute and everyone here, thank you very much for your speech.
Thank you. Have a great conference.